problem? What's our situation?
Our psych unit is in bad shape, Major Professional Thought. We were pinned down by a frontal assault from extra hours at work, and we were holding our own just fine then, but then we were outflanked by some unexpected major home repairs. There hasn't been enough mental reserves to cover the assault, and we've been taking heavy casualties. Sergeant Enjoyment and Corporal Inspiration have taken hits really bad, sir.
Damn. They were a bit flighty, but they could always keep up the morale of the unit. Well, where's Sergeant Work Ethic? He usually gets this unit through this type of thing.
Well, he took a hit from an apathy mortar in the flanking attack, sir. He's in pretty bad shape.
Blast! Those bloody things should be outlawed. We need to move this psyche out of this crossfire.
But sir, the other units are depending on us holding the line.
Your concern is admirable, Corporal.
Yes, it's my job, sir.
Yes, I suppose it is. But I'm not going to retreat. We just need to get to higher ground to get the assistance for these fallen comrades here. We should be able to get the signal on the top of that hill.
The signal? Of course. I didn't think of that.
That's why I'm here, my boy. Grab up the wounded and have Corporal Organization take private's duty, honor, and loyalty to cover our escape. I trust those boys to do the right thing. Come on, men! Up that hill!
Move it, guys! We need to make it to the top of the hill for the wounded's sake!
Can we... Yes, we've made it to the top of the hill.
Can we get to the signal here, sir? Are we gonna be okay?
International Detective Dragons from Outer Space.
Yes, Paul. Everything is going to be just fine.
Hello, and welcome, or welcome back, to International Detective Dragons from Outer Space. I'm Adam 5, and thank you very much for downloading and listening to episode 27. You may recall the topic for this show was to be selected by you, the listeners, and as such, prompted by an extensive email from the Norwegian Viking, today's topics are many. Here's just one of them. Can you tell if a person is good or evil based on his or her religion? We have email responses from Sarah, Kurt the Camera Guy, Frapper Map Corrections, News, and New Member Welcomes. All this and more, coming your way at long last. Sorry. Right after this.
Slinky toys are fun toys.
What walks downstairs alone or in pairs and makes a slinkity sound? A spring, a marvelous thing. Everyone knows it's Slinky. It gives a big lift when wrapped as a gift. A very likable toy. It's falling in place, brings smiles to your face. Something kids can enjoy. It's Slinky. For fun, it's a wonderful toy. It's Slinky. It's fun for a girl and a boy. And Slinky Mobiles with big Slinky wheels and pistons that move as you go. It makes a great sound when you pull it around. The driver's an old-timey fellow. A Slinky dog, a Slinky train, many more wonderful toys. You tug the string, they do their thing. They're great for girls and boys. They're Slinkies. Really wonderful toys. They're Slinkies. They're fun for girls and boys.
Slinky, Slinky dog, Slinky Mobile. All Slinky toys sold separately by James Industries.
Hello, I'm Nev.
And I'm Sarah.
From Does My Geek Look Big In This.
And you're listening to International Detective Dragons from Outer Space.
The best detective dragons in the universe.
I cannot let another minute pass before jumping in to this pre-recording and saying thank you to the camera guy for providing the intense metaphoric combat you heard opening this show. I said it to him already, and I'll say it here. Now, only a working guy could have pegged my situation so accurately over the past few weeks. Bullseye for the camera guy, and an absolutely fantastic piece of writing and dramatization. I'm completely thrilled to see this kind of creativity and fun being generated by podcasting in general, and it makes me feel special and extremely lucky to receive audio gifts like this between Kurt
Sam Chup, Mr. T, Sarah, and Nev, and any other voices I get to play on IDDFOS in the future. It just makes the show richer and a finer experience. Thank you all. And thank you, Camera Guy, for rescuing episode 27 from the thick of danger and delay. Now, I'll tell you, I've got something of a situation here that I've been trying to handle smoothly, but pretty much failing at, and it's what I'm going to call the Billy Pilgrim syndrome in podcasting. These paragraphs I'm recording here and now are, well, they were voiced after the main bulk of 27 was already done, but not edited yet. But since I've been delayed so long without getting the episode out, so much has happened that I have to tell you. Otherwise, much of what you'll hear won't make any sense. On Monday, November 6th, I was lucky enough to actually meet in person Nev from Does My Geek Look Big In This, Victor from Fistful of Comics and Games, Working Man and his fine family also from Fistful of Comics and Games, and Sasha and Caroline from Game of the Podcasting. We all met up in Manhattan and had breakfast at a diner. So if you hear tiny bits of audio that seem plopped in unannounced, like this one, well, you now have a context. Now, it's a certainty I'll be spending time in the future on a podcast to talk about that meeting at length, but episode 27 is waiting to resume its normal course. Though I'm unstuck in time with audio, at least the show is out, and thanks to Camera Guy, it opened in just the right way. We now return you to your regularly scheduled but abominably late International Detective Dragons from Outer Space. Do yourself a favor and check out the Gamers Haven podcast. I had fun listening to episode 1, and I have inside information that they've got a lot more fun on the way. Look for the link to them in this episode's Kutukatingatungatungs. Grab their feed and save it to your podcatcher. Is it worth it? Yes. Way to go, Ethan, Jeremy, and Nathan. I know, I'm late. I know I'm late, folks. I did it again. But life and work and time ganged up on me big time this week. So I'll just do what I seem to be doing a lot lately. I'll apologize and move on. I've got plenty of excuses. None of them are worth your time to listen to. So here we are, at the top of episode 27. And first up, new Frapper Map members! But first, before that, there's a correction. In the previous show, my welcome to a new Frapper Map member, to Sharon, was based partially on faulty info, but I'll let him tell the tale. He wrote this in the Frapper Map forum page. I see that the Frapper Map has once again screwed me over. I was born and raised in Finland, and I've never even been to India. Sorry to disappoint you on not being that international. I picked up Ishmael the other day. It's nice reading something other than fantasy for a change. Though the gorilla doesn't seem that condescending or arrogant. Maybe I haven't gotten to that part yet. Actually, Sharon, the arrogance of the gorilla more likely stems from the crabbiness of Annum 5, coupled with the foolish choice of reading the book from 2:30 a.m. to 6:30 a.m. As I said, I don't know how it will come across to others, but to me, oh, he just hit a series of sore spot bullseyes in my fortress of opinions. I had my mind all made up, and he confused me with the facts, the hairy bastich. There I go again. This poor guy just wrote one paragraph, and I interrupt even that. Sorry. And, well, the name Sharon comes from the boatman. It sounds a bit feminine, but I've used it for 5 years now. Keep up the good work. Thank you, Sharon. I'll do my best. Sorry, that Frapper software played silly buggers with your location info, but as I said in my Frapper reply, Finland is plenty international enough for me. I had a hard time with the Frapper map interface myself, especially when I was first trying it out. I don't think I've used half the features it has available because I just can't acclimate myself to it very well. It works enough to the extent that I can at least get messages out and welcome people and see who's joined. Speaking of who's joined, the two new members. New members to the Frapper map that bring it up to 23 and myself. First, I would like to extend a hand of welcome and thank Timewind from Augusta, Maine for joining. Upon placing his pin on the Frapper map, Timewind said,
"Great show."
Thank you very much indeed, Timewind. What a great handle, Timewind. Mysterious, sweeping, epic, and they called him Time Wind.
Well chosen.
And so, welcome. Next, from Seattle, Washington, Geek Beard. Geek Beard had this to say for all of us when he joined.
Insanity has never been this chocolatey.
Now, I'm just going to be lazy here and repeat what I wrote in the forums to welcome Geek Beard. Geek Beard enters our group with a sharp observation. It is indeed true. And this is a situation that must be nurtured and protected. I have just been informed by Little Winds that scientists have discovered the sequence of the 1.14 million base pairs that make up the genetic code of Treponema pallidum, which can lead to insanity. And, in a totally unrelated story, an international team of scientists has published the first two genome sequences for a destructive group of plant pathogens called Phytophthora, a fungi that destroys chocolate. Coincidence? I don't think so. Welcome, Geek Beard. Very good to have you both on the Frapper Map. And this week's virtual menu for all of us to nosh on as our intercontinental stratospheric veranda sweeps along under the stars. A veranda, I am pleased to say, is free of anyone even remotely scruffy. We have this week cold vegetable platters and 18 varieties of dressing. Vinegar, sweet and sour sauce, French, Thousand Island, melted butter, the whole gamut. The veggies are cooked and then chilled. Broccoli, cauliflower, asparagus, those little baby corn cobs. No carrots, though. How did they miss the carrots? Well, anyway, the beverage. The beverage is Fresca. Fresca? They still make Fresca? Well, it's not that bad, I guess. Oh, wait, here's two cases of Asti Spumanti. Excellent. Mild, sweet, and sparkling. Good deal. That will do nicely. If your pin is not in the IDD FOS Frapper Map, see what you're missing? Now, I've got two more Frapper Map-related notes here. First, a member of We Few Elite and Superior Beings, a recently joined member, Direwolf, has written a marvelous piece about myth. More actually an alternate version of classic myth creation, adding some new players into the mix. But it's better to hear it yourself rather than hear me talk about it. And how can you do that? Well, listen to Direwolf read it himself on the most recent episode of Misfit Brew, number 18, I believe. Way to go, Direwolf. Nicely written piece. And while I have Misfit Brew here on stage, thank you, Mr. Bradley, for the glowing review and endorsement of IDDFOS in Misfit Brew number 18. I'm much obliged. And my assessment of all the audio coming from the House of the Harping Monkey remains, as always, enthusiastically the same. As you pointed out recently, owing to some very basic questions, some wonderful synchronicity, and the research you did in finding the Fifth World site, topics and discussions on a lot of podcasts are running on parallel tracks lately. Different cups, different shapes, different designs, but all pouring out water. Amazing. I better just say thank you and move on, because I hear the subtle footsteps of the tangent imp coming to lead me astray. I will, though, take this moment to announce that episode 28 will be focusing on an email response from Jason Gadeski, the techno shaman and one of the founders of the Fifth World, a response that he wrote to episode 25. It's an extensive email, and it's a very thorough discussion on, well, all by itself, regarding the subjects of the Fifth World, the state of humanity, as explored by the work of the Anthropic Network, and how it related to our, essentially, pretty much our whole three-episode series on humanity's place in nature. And so, I thank you very much indeed, Mr. Gadeski, for contributing your time and such a terrifically rich email. I'm looking forward to exploring that thoroughly in episode 28. I did say two more notes about the Frapper Map. Here's the second. Another member of the IDDFOS Frapper Map, Jim from Buffalo, has already launched his own podcast. I checked it out, And let me tell you, as far as tabletop gaming is concerned, the impression I got was, man, do these guys know what they're talking about. Gary, Mike, and Jim. Primary focus of the podcast is the Heroes system. And this is hardcore GM stuff about several systems, not just that one. And the gameplay that's related to them. And they've got some very definite points of view. It's worth your time to check it out. It's called 5X Stun, or 5 Times Stun. Every time I read it, I'm confused about how to pronounce it. I only listened to it once, I'm sorry. But of course, I'll have a link to that site in the Gurikatingatangatungs as well. So congratulations and good job, Jim from Buffalo. Next up, an email response from Sarah to put a capper on and kind of offer some closure to the Infinity topic. That introduced by the audio that I found that was tucked away and hidden from my sight since August 15th. But here it is. Sarah writes,
I have to admit that I did a maths degree and found some of the concepts used as tools a little hard to swallow, infinity and imaginary numbers being the worst offenders. I think this seriously impeded my career as a mathematician. I'm not, basically. My gut instinct is that these things are just plain wrong. I know that they work and have been proven to be incredibly useful, but I'm afraid they're just broken as far as I'm concerned. When using infinity to prove anything, I always get nervous. Back to Douglas Adams again. If there are a finite number of people and an infinite number of worlds, and any finite number divided by infinity is as close to nothing as it can be, then any people you meet are just figments of your deranged imagination. Something that might be worth remembering if you do meet Nev. Anyway, back to the old grindstone. Best of Hayes, Sarah.
Okay, I think that needs a little musical bumper.
Mwah, mwah.
I think she just had a little bit of a good time on you, Nev. Hopefully, we will prove Douglas Adams wrong very soon.
Yeah, we record, he edits, I do show notes, so. Or, how do you say it? I can't say it. You two are the only ones.
No, I can't say it either. After you wrote it down, I realized I was actually saying it incorrectly.
Oh, sorry.
And it's all your fault.
You could get hurt trying that. I've been saying it since I was 12. You gotta approach it with caution. It's not necessary. Just say worst notes or show notes.
I prefer notes about the show.
Although I was prepared to prove who I was by saying gudakatingatangatung. I had to wait until Neville was taking a sip to do that.
Thank you.
Wow. Excellent.
And the only other thing I can say is, Nev, Mrs. Annam 5, and Sarah, I am convinced, would get along famously. But thank you very much, Sarah, for that additional feedback regarding Infinity. I did spend a good deal of time during this past week. Actually, the week before last. This past week, I didn't have time to blow my nose, let alone think about anything. What a grind. But I did spend quite a bit of time trying to find that real-world absolute, that example of a genuine infinity that was irrefutable. And obviously I couldn't find one. If anyone listening can come up with one, please write in. But I'm inclined to throw quite a bit of weight behind Sarah's opinion because she's done the math. That wasn't meant to be a joke. I think we're going to cut to a break here because we got quite a bit of feedback. And on the opposite side of the break, we will hear from Kurt the Camera Guy. So please hang out and enjoy this. Back in a bit.
Hello there. You know, I've been all around this wonderful world of ours, and in all of this world, nothing else is silly putty. What is silly putty? Well, it's a real solid liquid. If you pull it so, it'll go forever, like taffy. But if you give it a sharp tug, it'll break like a biscuit. Now, when you make silly putty round and drop it, it'll bounce higher than a rubber ball. And here's something else you can do with Silly Putty. Flatten it, press a picture in your newspaper, lift it, stretch it this way and that, and you'll get something that's really funny. Always put your Silly Putty back in its egg, or it will run slowly away. You can buy Silly Putty for $1 wherever toys are sold. And remember, nothing else is Silly Putty.
And back we are, so let's get right to it. This from Kurt, the camera guy. Subject line is, welcome back.
I hope your week away was enjoyable, productive, or both. I know I certainly enjoyed your bonus episodes very much. I had heard about half of the material before, but there were a few things I'd missed. My favorite piece that I heard for the first time I would call A Fistful of Shakespeare. Personally, I think it went on for one movie clip too long, but it was a great concept and well executed.
I agree with you 100% on that one, and I don't know what to tell you. I went mad. I just went mad. Originally, it was just the Shakespearean dialogue itself that was recorded, and then for whatever reason, I just decided I had to put it into the context of a talk show, and boy, did I talk. If I ever happen to meet the Fistful of Comics and Games fellows, I am going to apologize to them personally for sending them a 16-minute-long mini-drama with the nerve to call it a mini-drama and expect them to be able to do anything with it. I'm so glad they made it. They made it a part of their RSS feed, and that was just dynamite and wonderful of them to do. But, oh man, did that go on. I agree.
I made a promise. I mean, I didn't go to print yet, but I made a promise in this podcast that I'm number 27 for IDDFOS, that I would apologize personally to Fistful of Comics and Games for sending a 16-minute long mini-drama.
Oh, we loved it. We loved it. We loved it.
And so I have. And there, that's out of the way. Oh. It's not going to make
Hello,
the show.
Hello,
guys.
Hey, how you doing? How are you?
Yeah.
Good. Yes, so can I get you?
To continue. Sorry. Here we go.
I'm sending this note from New Mexico, en route from Long Island, New York, to Rialto, California. You've commented in the past about my getting around, and I do indeed see a lot of the country in my job as a freight transportation specialist. I tend not to use the common name for it because it tends to drop other people's assessment of my intellect by about 40 IQ points. When asked, I generally just say, I drive for a living, and leave it at that.
Ladies and gentlemen, I saw this just the other day, and it is true. Without trucks, America stops. Hold whatever opinion you want about who's driving them and what they mean to you, but that's just a flat-out fact. Why did I have to say that? I didn't have to say that. Shut up, Adam. Read the email.
One thing that this job offers me is about 10 hours a day to think, and now listen to podcasts, while I'm playing in traffic. I guess you could call me a Rhodes philosopher.
R-O-A-D-S.
Rather than a Rhodes Scholar.
R-H-O-D-E-S.
I've been doing this for almost 13 years and have driven enough miles to circle the globe about 48 times.
Holy crap!
Without bumping into anything. Attached is a map of the states I've been through since I came back over the road this past February. I still have two more to go to complete the set. Again.
And I'm going to post the image of that map. Absolutely, of course, in the Kutikatingatungatungs, so that you can get an idea of just how much traveling Kurt the camera guy has done. I instinctively got the impression that he's seen so much more of this country, at least, than I have, obviously, and this email certainly confirmed that for me, and it will for you as well when you see this map. To continue.
Oh, and I've got a few pictures from my travels that you might find interesting, or at least amusing. And yes, if you find them fun enough, you can pass on the address.
You bet they're fun. Folks, check out photos.yahoo.com/Kurt on the go. That's CURTONTHEGO. Kurt on the go. One word. The images he's picked up and the captions he's supplied are just too much fun. So I'll be putting that link in the Kudukadinkadongadongs as well, of course. And I got to tell you, I learned things about this country as I perused those photos. Yes, Battlestar Galactica fans, there is a town called Frackville. But he writes further.
Your podcast has been a very welcome addition to both the listening and thinking portions of my day. As such, I feel compelled to be involved in it. However, feel free to let me know if I ever cross the line from regular contributor to pain in the...
Now, I wrote back to Kurt specifically on that one point, and I'm going to say it pretty much the same thing out loud to anyone listening that's considering writing in or has already written in. Anything that I get in response to this podcast is a gift. It displays an interest on your part, and it's time taken out of your day, and I appreciate it. No matter how many times you write in or what you send in, the day I see something as an annoyance is the day I should pack away this microphone and go have my head examined. Or I should just, you know, stare into a mirror and make faces because I'd really need to know what a fool looked like. No, this podcast is about me finding out what you think and hopefully making this a completely listener-driven show where I interject my two cents every once in a while. Not like now where I just go on and on forever interrupting everyone's emails and sentences. Okay. To continue.
I know you have mentioned a few times the fact that you missed Gen Con this year. And while it's not as good as being there, I would like to send you one of my picture DVDs with a little over 5,000 pictures of the convention, spanning from 1995 to 2005. Please let me know how to get it to you, and I will send it out whenever I get home. Best of days, camera guy.
That would be so fabulous. That would be a wonderful, wonderful thing to get. Thank you so much. Excellent. And folks, if you haven't checked out Kurt the Camera Guy's Gen Con photos, please. I'm going to be placing it in the right-hand column under the permanent links of favorite sites of IDDFOS. It's already in the Kudukadinkadongadongs of the show where it was first mentioned, but I'm going to place it there as well so you'll find it easy to get to. Wonderful, wonderful pictures from so many Gen Con shows. Fantastic costumes. Lots of weird and wacky people, just like me, who had the time, energy, and chutzpah to get dressed up as their favorite characters. Thank you so much, Camera Guy. Now, I should mention, I received a couple of other emails from Kurt offering suggestions for show topics and lots of different topics. Lots of different interesting questions to ponder and observations of his own that could fill several podcasts, and they're going to, but we're going to devote most of episode 27 to the letter that I got from the Norwegian Viking, Mr. T, pretty much religion itself, maybe a little tighter examination on the myth or the biblical portrayal of the fall of humanity will be discussed. We're going to take one quick break here and get right into the letter that Mr. T sent shortly after I posted episode 26. Now, the offer remains open for suggesting topics for shows. It certainly will never hurt, particularly if you write in as well and give your two cents. It can all be examined. Fortunately, because of the amount of material I've gotten so far, the next couple of podcasts, at the very least, are covered. That's not to say that I have to be exclusive on what I'm going to be doing in them. Change can always occur and will occur. So if you've got emails that you haven't sent in yet, please do so. Please join the Frapper Map. Let us all know you're out there. And I'm happy to say now that it is us now. It's not just me anymore. This is really, at least for the past 10 or 12 podcasts, this has really become a listener-driven show. And when I say we, I'm talking about everyone that's written in. all the people that have sent in suggestions, observations, insights, and just really, really wonderful things to be able to share with everybody that downloads the podcast. That makes International Detective Dragons from Outer Space us. You guys and me. I just happen to be the one with the microphone. Where was I going with that? I don't know. I think it was about to take a break, and then we were going to get into Mr. T's letter. Yeah, I think that was it. And so that's what we'll do. Back in a bit.
Hello, sweetheart.
Hello, handsome.
What can I sell you today?
Well, I don't know. Look, some of the other fellas are sweet-talking me.
Oh?
One of them says he'll give me platform aid.
Mm-hmm.
Another one is doing a big detergent number.
Mm.
And then there's anti-icing, and the one with anti-rust, and, well, I'm confused. You said you were best.
I believe we've never been formally introduced. I have the honor to be Count Super Clean Detergenistic Anti-Icing Butane Platinate Gasoline.
Gosh. I didn't know.
But, my dear, what's in a name? I believe it's the good you do in this world that's important.
Oh, yeah.
Hence the guarantee. Fill thy tank but once under the great DX trial bond, and shouldst thou believe it is not superior to thy old stuff, you'll get your money back. I made that a decree. It's a matter of honor.
Gosh, Count Super Clean DX.
You can call me DX.
You're wonderful.
I know.
And so, let's proceed now and get to the main body of the show, which will consist of the Norwegian Viking Mr. T's letter. Here we go.
Hello, Annam. It's always fun to listen to you badgering a fictional character, more than less a fictional gorilla. Think, damn it, think harder. Yes, Annam, I think we have all had that teacher. Well, I decided to write you an email this time, since I agree with Mick. Listening to you read the mail is very entertaining, and you don't have to deal with my broken English. This mail will be long. Feel free to edit or ignore it.
Ignore, yeah. Fat chance. And broken English? Tell you what, I'll correct you on your little minor flaws here and there in English on the same day that I can speak one word of Norwegian. Yeah, if we're going to use the word... Let's use the word infinity one more time in this show. Your English is infinitely better than my Norwegian. Sorry. He didn't get very far before I interrupted him. Shame on me. To continue.
I wanted to respond to some of your Human Origin series, and in the same time, start a new theme for you. Beware, during this email I might draw the religious card. I might even quote the Bible. But I also want to look at other religions like Islam and Buddhism. I said I wanted to come back to the theme of good versus evil, so you can consider this email a promise fulfilled. I would also like to explore the religious hatred that has spawned since 9/11. But first of all, the fall of man. No, our fall was not standing upright, and it certainly wasn't deciding who lives and who dies. We still don't control that. According to the original story from the Bible, our fall was our lust for knowledge. The book of Genesis, chapter 3, verses 2 through 5. The woman said to the serpent, "We may eat fruit from the trees in the garden, but God did say, 'You must not eat fruit from the tree that is in the middle of the garden, and you must not touch it, or you will die.'" Note, yes, he gave an exact description, in the middle of the garden. "You will not surely die," the serpent said to the woman, "for God knows that when you eat of it, your eyes will be opened, and you will be like God, knowing good and evil." Yes, I know it's a story, but it's a good interpretation of why Christians, like me, believe in a kind and loving God, even in this cruel world.
And you know, I wasn't really sure what you meant by that. I had to reread the letter a few times, but I'm guessing here it's because... you're viewing the creator of the universe as giving humanity the choice, which I imagine places God at least in the eyes of you as a Christian, being a kind and loving God. That's my guess. If I'm wrong about that, please write in and correct me. Moving on.
According to my interpretation of the Bible, we wanted to know. We wanted to know the difference between good and evil. We wanted to know pain and comfort, hate and compassion. joy and sorrow, envy and pride, lust and contempt, arrogance and respect, indifference and love. And I'm sure if we got the choice again, if the big man himself came down and said, do you want to be ignorant of the forces of this world, or do you want to know the truth, the differences and the contrasts, we would have said the truth in a heartbeat. But what do you think?
Let's see, do I want to swallow the blue pill or the red pill? I think, Mr. T, a lot would depend on what state I actually was in when the question was asked. And I think that is one of the core secrets of the story, one of the core elements of the myth that I never fully understood. Just who were we? Who were Adam and Eve? What state were they actually in? But I'll get into that later. I'm sorry. To continue.
Let me rephrase. You're happy, really happy, for a long time. Then, after a while, you start to get quite ignorant of your situation and start lusting for more. Suddenly, one loses everything, and it feels terrible. And you remember what you had. Everyone has experienced this at least once in their lifetime. Everyone heartbroken has had this feeling. It's called a catastrophe. It is when something goes from good to bad really fast. 9/11 is a good example of this. The word catastrophe is based on the Greek katastrephein, which literally means to turn. Now let's look at the contrast. A family from New Orleans has lost everything. Family members, jobs, house, pets, sentimental items, all are gone. All they have left is the clothes on their back, what they can carry, and each other. Suddenly, a man comes over to them and says, I have heard your story, and I would like to help. I own a house in Louisiana and would like to lend it to you till you get back on your feet. We have great schools for your kids and lots of work opportunities. I know it will not replace what you've lost, but we're a friendly town, and we'd like to help you start over. Tolkien called this an otastrophe. But we have no real word for this. When something goes really fast from bad to good, the closest we get is a miracle. But that would have to encompass a divine intervention. Or would it? It's strange, isn't it, that tragedies like the tsunami, 9/11, and New Orleans always seem to be followed by heartwarming, loving stories. It's almost like tragedies bring out a strong need to be and act what we call humane. Why, of course, you say. But when you think of it long enough, isn't it kind of strange?
Well, the strangeness, so far as I can tell, and please, anyone else that's got specific opinions or answers about any of the questions that Mr. T is asking here, write in and let us all know. Because I don't want it to be just me responding to his letter. I want everyone else, if they choose to, please, to respond as well. The strangeness comes in figuring out human motivations. I've said in the past, I don't think people, or at least the majority of people, enjoy seeing others in pain. And when a tragedy strikes, when a catastrophe hits, the impulse to help, the impulse to alleviate the pain and better the situation of people that have suffered that catastrophe comes to the fore, comes to the surface. If you want to call that divine intervention, well, there are some people that may look at it that way. And I can't say that it's any less valid a view than any other. There are too many people that would argue, and I think maybe myself included, that if it weren't for at least a prime creator of the universe, we wouldn't be here in the first place. But moving on.
Okay, I can see someone out there is rolling their eyes and saying, damn, Jesus freak. Thinks he's so much better than everyone else just because he wears a cross around his neck. Hell no, there is no evil or good, it's just people. Yes, I hear you on the other side saying, amen, praise the Lord, this man knows his Bible. It's time that the world finally saw that we Christians are the good people of this world. Muslims and Islams are the true evil. Islam should be banned from every Western country. I say amen. This brings us to our main theme. No. You can't define if a person is good or bad from his religion. I know this is a trend. I know people who believe this. But truly, people, come on. No major religion is by nature directed against evil intentions. In fact, we all strive towards a better world. The problem is the people using religion as an excuse to obtain power, start wars, and do evil acts. The people corrupting wise words of the prophets, Christians and Muslims alike, to serve their own personal goals. That is an evil act, no matter what religion you have. No, I am no better than my Muslim brother, my Hindu sister, or the man who decided to believe only in science. We all want a better world.
I can't imagine, Mr. T, I can't imagine anyone listening to this show that would disagree with that even for a moment.
I have so much to say on these themes that I could make my own podcast based on this.
Oh, sorry, I don't know how that noise got in there.
So, I think I will stop here. I'd like to know what you think. Best of days, Mr. T. P.S. Have you ever seen a series called Carnival? It's an HBO production, and I saw the first season on DVD. I have to say that its style and theme are very IDDFOS. A fantasy world based on the 1930s of U.S. history. I recommend it. This series also deals with the theme of good and evil.
Carnival. Oh, I'll have to look that up. No, I haven't seen that, and it sounds very interesting. If anyone else has seen it and can offer a review before I actually get to it, please write in. Favorite episodes, that type of thing. All right, then. Before I get into any kind of heavy response to what Mr. T has written, I'm going to cut to another break and give everyone a chance to take it all in, breathe, relax, and enjoy this, please. Back in a bit.
Hi, kids.
Hi, kids.
Kids, let's all sing the kids' song. If you want shoes with lots of pep,
get Keds, Keds, Keds.
Or bounce and zoom in every step,
get Keds, Keds, Keds. You'll be a champion with style. You hit that ball a half a mile. They're tough, they last a long, long while. Keds, Keds, Keds.
There's a pair of smart youngsters. Hi, kids.
Hi, kids.
Say, why do you kids wear Keds?
So I can run faster and jump farther.
So I can win more often.
Right. Always look for the label big and blue.
Keds, Keds, Keds.
That spells out U.S. Keds for you.
Keds, Keds, Keds. Those shot blue arches sure are neat. The right support for growing feet. So be a champion athlete. Keds, Keds, Keds.
Product of United States Rubber.
Truth is stranger than fiction. And this is the proof. This is Ripley. Believe it or not. In one of the most amazing feats of physical endurance, Batoka, a witch doctor in Africa, stood motionless for 17 days and nights on a pair of stilts. Believe it or not. In a moment, I'll tell you about an odd sack of mail. A weird shipment of mail was sent to Hernando Cortez, conqueror of Mexico, in 1520. It was posted in Veracruz and carried a distance of 200 miles to Mexico City. The mail, wrapped as parcels, loaded on the backs of ordinary letter carriers, was delivered 96 hours later. What was in the mailbags? Six live soldiers caught in an abortive plot to overthrow Cortez. Believe it or not.
I think one of the most important words you used, Mr. T, and very wisely, too, was interpretation. Now, if we're going to entertain discussions like this, if I'm going to have a whole podcast with the subject matter religion, if we're going to enter into a serious contemplation of particular religious points, I think it's important to remember how many assumptions have to be made before we can even get to square one. Now, we got to start with the first and the foremost assumption. We have to assume that there is a creator of the universe. I mean, if we're going to cut to the core of the whole reasoning behind religious philosophy, that we've got to start with that. We have to assume, yes, there is a God. Next step we have to take is that, particularly with regard to the parable of the fall of man,
the fall of humanity, the Adam and Eve story, we have to assume that at some point in whatever state human beings were in, we were capable of being spoken to by God and speaking to the creator of the universe. We have to have that as an assumption within the parable, within the context of a parable. And that's the next assumption, that in fact the Adam and Eve story is a parable, something that was meant to explain the origin of humanity and why it's presently capable of dying, has to work in order to stay alive, at least for a few hours a day, and is capable of making good and bad choices. Now, that's an assumption I think you've made. As you said you know it's a story. And I think that's a safe assumption to make, too. The next assumption we have to make, if we're going to go into examining Bible stories, Bible quotations, all those citations, we have to assume that the quotation we heard from Genesis in English is the most precise and accurate translation of the original text it was written in. Now, I've already talked about translations in general in episode 18, but I always stop and ponder that. I always stop and consider that whenever I hear whichever version of the Bible is being cited. Is it an absolute accurate interpretation or translation, rather? The next assumption, the next step in having givens to start out with before you get to square one, in order to hold the Bible as an authority worth quoting and an accurate and a holy text relevant to our past and our present state as human beings, we have to assume that the writers of it were inspired and guided by the creator of the universe. I don't have a problem with that. I've already stated in another podcast, I have no problem with that. The caveat that I add to that, the thing that I usually try to keep in mind, or at least say out loud, is, okay, but many other texts, we have to accept that many other texts were also inspired by the creator of the universe, that there is no cutoff point, that it's possible that other works also. And I don't think you'd have a problem with that either, Mr. T. I don't know. Maybe anyone listening have a problem with that? Right in. Let us know. Okay, with all those assumptions made, with all those accepted at least for the sake of argument as givens, then we can get into an examination of your letter. Now, I say we, and of course I'm the one presently with the microphone, so I get to get my put my two cents in first. Anyone listening that wants to add, please do. Write in, audio, whatever method you choose, because, is what I think important? It's no more important than what you all think. But I'll start by saying, on the whole, Mr. T, your letter has the kind of passion and compassion that I'm guessing is shared by most of the people on the planet, regardless of what language they speak. Now, in particular, I don't know how many people on Earth would agree with you that you can't tell if a person is good or evil based on his or her religion. I know you can't tell. I don't believe we can pass that kind of judgment or come to that kind of conclusion. I can tell from your letter that you don't either. I hope that most other people on Earth are smart enough to know that too. So I wouldn't hesitate for a second to agree with you. I'll venture a guess that most people listening to this podcast wouldn't disagree with you. You can't tell what kind of man or woman you're dealing with based on their professed faith. But if you look around in the world, you pick up a newspaper, you've got to, as you pointed out, you've got to be appalled at what you're looking at. And you got to say out loud pretty much what you said. Come on, people. But for the rest of the letters, we opened with that question, can you tell? It was a rhetorical question, top of the show. Can you tell if a person is good or evil based on his religion? Not a tough one for people that at least have some semblance of an enlightened mind. But for the rest of the letter, it's rich with topics. You could fill whole shows with it. I'd like to look specifically at the story of the fall, the Adam and Eve Garden of Eden story, and I want to drop this in here because it's kind of worked its way into my head. I don't know if anybody else is experiencing this, but lately I'm seeing two different versions of the Eden story of the fall. I'm seeing a dumb Adam and Eve, and I'm seeing a smart Adam and Eve. The whole, all based around this fall of humanity question. I'm seeing two scenarios being put forward lately, and it's specifically because of that book, Ishmael. Maybe it's just me, but all right, let me limb out these two different versions. It has mostly has to do with the state humans actually were in when this so-called fall occurred. In one version, in my head, in one version, the state of the human being, now this is for Westerners, the Adam and Eve story, in one version, they live in a garden where, as the parable goes, they live in a garden where death is unknown. Their own nakedness and innocence are total. They cannot perform an evil act. They have no knowledge, but they are spoken to by the creator of the universe, and they can understand the creator of the universe. They speak to God, and they're talked to by God. Now, for the real-world parallel to the story, I set this in the context of the primate that has not yet become self-aware. The primate that still lives and dies more or less indistinguishable from the other animals. And I look at, in this version, I look at the fall from Eden as the point at which the primate becomes intelligent. Okay, that's one version. And this other version that's in my head now, we've got the state of human beings as an intelligent Adam and Eve. Just enough awareness to be tempted by something that was forbidden to them, like kids, like children, fascinated by a locked cabinet. They still can't perform an evil act, but they can make the choice to defy the rule of the creator of the universe. And that's in a parable sense. For the real world parallel, I'd set it in the context of the primate that's already been intelligent for several hundred thousand years and is markedly different from the rest of the animals. It's got skins and tools and traps and tribal communities and a language. And in this context, the fall from Eden, the fall of humanity, is the desire to be masters of all other creatures and fulfill some kind of higher destiny by stockpiling food and increasing in number. This fall, I guess, would be the losing of the contentment of the hunter-gatherer way of life. The lust for knowledge you're talking about, I don't know how to understand. I don't know how to put that in context. And I thought I'd just bring that up. So there we have, in my head, two different versions of this fall. And I'm having a hard time keeping them separate or combining them correctly whenever I hear this discussed, because it gets me very confused at times. I don't know how anybody else feels about this, but that's where I'm at with it. I'm gonna put a capper on this. I'm not going to put a capper on it, actually. What I'm going to do is just read to you the core questions that Mr. T came up with after having already written his letter. And these are all open for discussion, of course, as is anything else that you hear on this podcast. But he refers to them as black and white questions. And I'll just read them off really quickly here. And you can respond to or not respond to, or just think about them over the course of the week. Talk about them with your friends, or write about them in your diary, whatever you want to do. Here we go.
If we get the choice again, if the big man himself came down and said, "Do you want to be ignorant of the forces of this world, or do you want to know the truth, the difference and the contrasts?" We would have said, "The truth," in a heartbeat. Or, "What do you think?"
Next question.
Would a person who had experienced great sorrow experience greater joy?
The next question.
Tolkien referred to this as an otastrophe, but we have no real word for this, when something goes really fast from bad to good. The closest we get is a miracle. But that would have had to encompass a divine intervention, or would it? It's strange. Next question. It's strange, isn't it, that tragedies like the tsunami, 9/11, and New Orleans always seem to be followed by a heartwarming, loving stories? It's almost like tragedies bring out a strong need to be and act what we call humane. Well, of course, you say, but When you think about it long enough, isn't it kind of strange?
And finally,
no, you can't define if a person is good or bad from his religion. No major religion is by nature directed against evil intentions. More to the contrary. Do you disagree?
Now, you know what? On this last question, Mr. T, I don't think I'm fully understanding this. I've read it a couple of times, and I tried fitting it in to the context of your letter, and I'm not really sure what you're saying here, because I don't know. Maybe it's just the way I'm looking at it, but I'm going to read it again. No major religion is by nature directed against evil intentions. More to the contrary. I would think the opposite. Unless I'm grossly misunderstanding this, I would think that yes, most, if not all, major religions are by nature directed against evil intentions. I'm not sure I'm getting what you mean there, but those were the specific points I think that Mr. T wanted to see examined closely, or at least commented about, black and white questions, as he calls them. And I'll skip now to the sampler from the old time radio show that'll be offered for this week. It is from a show called The Berkus Way to Dynamic Living. This particular show, I believe, is called The Guide to Spiritual Fulfillment. This is a comedy, just so that you know. I don't know how long this clip's going to be because I haven't set it up yet, but that will be offered as the old-time radio show for this week. Following that clip, I think I'm probably just going to go right into the music because I'm running up against the wire here, folks, with number 27, and I really do want to get it posted as quickly as possible. I haven't got an ending written, and so I think we're pretty much going to call this the end of the show. Please enjoy this clip from The Berkus Way. Please enjoy the music that follows, and on the opposite side of the music, as always, I'll be saying my goodbyes.
Here you, young woman, can you tell us the way to Sodom?
No. This is the city of Gomorrah, if that's any use.
We hear tell these cities are dens of iniquity, that the people in this place think of nothing but vice and promiscuity and wild orgies and sex and eroticism. And stop doing that while I'm talking to you.
Sorry.
Come, we must look into these houses to see if there be any whom we should spare.
Yes.
Ah, good morrow, old woman.
We are the angels of death, withered old crone.
Yes, we have come to raise this city to the ground, ugly old scarecrow.
And we must find out whether you deserve to be spared, flea-ridden, diseased old fat.
Not today, thank you.
What do you mean, not today, decrepit, worm-eaten, disgustingly palsied old harpy?
You can't come in.
Whose house is this, grisly, disfigured, cadaverous, squalidly haggard old cow, who art no oil painter?
This is the house of Lot, nephew of Abraham.
Who's that at the door, gruesomely odious old Arabic?
It's the angels of death come to destroy the city, dear.
Tell them to come in, cankerously repelling old bitch.
He says, come in.
Thank you.
Now then, what do you want?
We have much work to carry out in this iniquitous land. We have orders to purge it of its misdeeds in a maelstrom of fire and brimstone, haven't we?
That's correct, Puss.
Exactly. But you and your family are to be saved. All you have to... Puss? What do you mean?
What?
You just called me Puss.
Nonsense.
Yes, you did. You distinctly called me Puss. You said, that's correct, Puss.
I don't think I did.
Yes, you did.
Oh, no, I didn't.
Yes, you did.
Oh, no, he didn't.
Oh, yes, he... Hang on, where did that audience come from? What's going on here?
Nothing.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that. I hope I enjoyed that. I don't know what it was. Really working on the fly here, folks, but thank you. Thank you all very much for listening to episode 27. Usually when you get on the topic of religion, lots of people have lots of things to say. Sometimes it's very easy to offend people and threaten their faith, threaten their belief systems. Honestly, I don't think anything we would discuss here seriously could do that, because I think people with the level of patience and the curiosity to listen to a show like this are probably quite comfortable in their level of faith. And if they're not, then they're searching for a truth on their own, and they're going to find it. I know I'm still looking myself. And the creator of the universe certainly doesn't need any defending from us. Or anyone. One religion bashing another is the most ridiculous thing I can think of, particularly when one of them is trying to defend what they believe is their God. So I suppose it's long past time in the world for that kind of silliness to stop. I know we all wish it would, particularly when bloodshed is involved. I don't know. It can get very ugly. But we're still trying, we're still asking, we're still listening, and we're still looking. And I hope you'll be back with us to listen to episode 28, the one in which I'll be reading and examining, among other feedback that I get from anyone else, the letter from Jason Gadeski, his response to our Humanity and Nature's trilogy. And that, of course, also in that episode, I'll be explaining why the podcast is called International Detective Dragons from Outer Space. Until then, I hope everything goes very well for you. And best of days.
This is a thought. A thought. A thought. Remember, listen for another adventure of...
International Detective Dragons from Outer Space.